Okay. Ladies, if you're all ready, I think we will start, and I'm sure people will be trailing in. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to be opening the House Committee on Human Services and Housing on Monday, June 17th, 2013, and we're having an informational hearing from the Department of Human Services. Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Lois Day. For the record, I'm the Director of Child Welfare at the Department of Human Services. And we really thank you for the opportunity to present on really what we view as our most critical child welfare initiative, which is designed to improve safety for children and build health in families. The initiative is really a combination of three separate efforts: differential response implementation, the completing the implementation of strengthening, preserving, and reunifying families programs, and further strengthening our Oregon safety model, so that all three of those work in concert to provide a better service for families. Presenting today is not me. Presenting today is Marita Johnson, who is the Deputy Director for Child Welfare, and Stacy Lake, who is our Manager for Differential Response. So I'm going to hand it over to them. Thank you.
And one of you will be explaining to us what differential response is, right?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
We will. So thank you for having us, Chair Tomei, and the rest of the committee. As Lois said, our presentation outline surrounds the three-prong approach to differential response, which includes differential response as a way to intervene with families, as well as our rolling out of the Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families Contract, or Senate Bill 964, and then our work to continue to improve our practice model, the Oregon safety model.
Thank you.
So we'd like to start with what we call our triangle that really illustrates how those three work together. Senate Bill 964, or Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families, is on the left-hand side of the triangle. And we see this as more outward-facing. It's how we interact with the community. It's how we help our communities look at service gaps, how we try and fill those service gaps in order for us to be able to provide services to families when we're out intervening. The right-hand side of the triangle is differential response. And we see that as more internal-facing, in that it's our practice. It's our policy, it's how we engage families, and it's how we really look at best practices to intervene in primarily families.
You didn't introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Marita Johnson.
Thank you, Marita. That's all we need.
So how we intervene with families, primarily families of neglect. And then built on top of that is our foundation of our child welfare practice, which is the Oregon safety model. This says safe families, but what we mean is our safe family home study process, so how we engage our foster parents and care providers through the safe family home study process, our screening intake, in-home services, and then along with that is also included our how we staff ourselves, you know, how we manage our workload, how we ensure that we're adequately staffed across our workforce to make sure the work gets done, and then ICWA compliance, because that also has an additional workload for us in order
for
us.
Tell us what ICWA stands for.
That's the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Thank you.
And in child welfare, we commonly call that ICWA, but that stands for the Indian Child Welfare
Act.
Thank you. So that's our triangle that we hope helps illustrate how the three really fit with each other. The next slide also illustrates how our child welfare system is really an interdependent system. We can't do it all ourselves as child welfare, and this, we hope, illustrates how there's an interplay between children, youth, families, foster parents, adoptive parents, and then the whole system around us, the faith, business community systems, DD services. I won't read them all to you. Mm-hmm. But we see ourselves as a part of the greater system, and that that in rolling out differential response, 964, and the rest of our child welfare practice, we really need to depend on and interact with all these people in the system in order for us to be able to help children be safe and for us to serve families. So I'm going to let Stacy move on and get into the meat of differential response for you.
Just announce yourself, Stacy,
yes.
Please.
Good afternoon, Chair Tomei, committee members. My name is Stacy Lake, and it was suggested I let you know this is my first time testifying.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about differential response. Oregon currently has one of the highest foster care placement rates in the country, and a while back we decided to take a look at that with the help of Casey Family Programs and look at proven models of intervention across the nation, what other states were doing to safely and equitably reduce foster care placement. And what we found in looking through what other states were doing was that there was really two components that seemed to be necessary to safely, equitably reduce foster care, and that's having an adequate community-based service array and having an alternate approach to Child Protective Services investigation. So I'll talk to you just a little bit about what differential response is and go into it a little bit more. It's really evolving child welfare practice. About half of the states in the country are doing some form of differential response. It's truly what it sounds like, a different way of responding. It's focused on the front end of child welfare work, so what we call assessment here in Oregon, what other states tend to refer to as investigations. Mm-hmm. So it's really about looking at approaching the family in a slightly different way, it's focused on child safety, of course, but also assessing the families in a different way. So here in Oregon, what we've decided, how we're going to start differential response is really having two tracks. So we're going to be looking at our traditional track, which is what we're doing now. It's a more investigatory approach, kind of a fact-finding, finding out who did what. And then our alternative track is more focused on assessing what the needs of the families are. And as I've said, both are the primary goal of both approaches is child safety. So as we're working to develop what differential response will look like in Oregon, we've been working on this for some time now, and we've developed what we call a design team that came together and was made up of various DHS staff and stakeholders from around the state. And what we did was, in implementation science, it's called the exploration visioning stages. What we did was we pulled those folks together and looked at what other states were doing and had them come together with some recommendations about how it should look for Oregon. Now we're getting closer to moving into another phase of implementation, which I'll call early implementation or installation, and we are looking at the people we have at the table and also bringing more folks in from different parts of the state and different areas of expertise to help us with that work as we move on into our next phase of implementation. We also would like to pull together a stakeholder advisory group, and we will have various subcommittees that will be focused on the real details of the work, so what screening tools might look like, what a family strengths and needs assessment tool might look like, how our family engagement practice can be enhanced here to fit in with the differential response approach. So we have various streams of work that will be happening that will feed up into the implementation team as the recommendations come forth.
Representative Tomei and members of the committee, I wanted to add a piece that I think we've offered to the committee in the past. When Stacy said that we have one of the highest foster care placement rates, that didn't in and of itself mean a negative thing, because the goal was to keep children safe. But what we did is we started looking at the demographics of the families of the children that were coming into care, and what we found was that our system really was being dominated by allegations of abuse, or excuse me, by allegations of neglect and threat of harm of neglect. And we found that the children who experienced neglect in families came into care at a higher rate and stayed longer than children experiencing other forms of abuse. And so that's, in essence, that said to us maybe our intervention needed some adjustment when dealing with the special needs of these families. And I think that's sort of an underlying piece of why we went in the direction of looking at designing and implementing an additional track to add into our system. So I just wanted to remind folks of that piece. Thanks,
Stacey. Thank you. So differential response is really seen as an enhancement of our current practice model, which Ms. Johnson already referred to as our Oregon safety model. As Lois mentioned, or Ms. Day mentioned, the traditional track is going to be more focused probably on our more serious cases, our physical abuse, maybe sexual abuse cases, and the alternative track will be more focused on our neglect cases. So it's an alternative approach to try to work better with those families. So we have looked at what other states have done. We want to learn from their successes and their mistakes or lessons learned. And so we looked at the outcomes from other states, and as you can see, many are positive. One of the more important outcomes that I've seen in the states that have done more rigorous evaluations is children are just as safe no matter which approach they're served in. And as I've mentioned before, about more than half the states in the country are working to transform the front end of their system in some way, and utilizing differential response. We looked closely at what the Quality Improvement Center gathered. The Quality Improvement Center is through the Kemp Center out of the University of Denver, and that was formerly through the American Humane Association, and they pulled together literature from a variety of states to see what they found. And there are four barriers to successful differential response implementation that we really wanted to pay attention to, and those are that professional and stakeholders' concerns about child safety. So folks tend to be concerned that children won't be as safe if we approach them in a different manner, and we found just the opposite in the evaluations other states have done, that children are, in fact, just as safe if they're served through that approach. And one of the ways we hope to help with that here in Oregon and using other states' lessons learned is by involving stakeholders early in the process. So we involved them in the exploration and visioning of this work, and we're going to be involving them in the implementation of the work.
So I'm going to ask a question, and other people can ask questions in addition. So we have twice as many. Kids in foster care. Do I remember that? Did I just write that down? Did I just imagine that? We have high incidence of kids going into foster care, higher than other states, right?
It's a higher rate.
Higher rate. Okay. So do other states report neglect as much as people in Oregon? And if so, what's the difference there? So if it were Colorado, say, does it fall under the neglect complaint, the same kind of situations? Am I making any kind of sense?
Okay. Yes, Chair Tomei, thank you for the question. I think what we find nationally is that the families reported to the child welfare system, the majority of children are removed because of neglectful situations. The majority of children and families are reported because of neglectful situations. Now, exact definitions vary from state to state.
So can you give us an example of a state that has fewer kids going into foster care, what their definition of neglect would be as compared to Oregon's definition of neglect?
Well, I come from a state which has a lower rate of placement. Texas, and we have several definitions related to neglect. It has to do with omission, maybe not taking action when a child was harmed. It has to do with medical neglect, not taking actions needed when a child's health is in danger. There is also neglectful supervision. So those are the three basic kinds of neglect that you find in Texas. I know here in Oregon, there we have what's called threat of harm, and that doesn't exist in Texas in the same way as it does here. But it's still used.
I want to finish. Let her finish this, please, and then I'll. So, were you? Did you finish?
Yes, I think.
Okay.
So.
My question, Madam Chair, would be: does Texas have mandatory reporting of child abuse as much as program as Oregon does?
Yes.
It does.
They do.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Representative Gallegos.
Maybe to help me sort of think this concept through. I mean, what it sounds like is really more of a differential management technique rather than differential response. You're still responding the same way you did before. You're just categorizing the abuse reports differently. So you've got neglect, and you're separating neglect then from your more serious accusations or offenses. That's my question.
Thank you for the question, Representative Gallegos. Actually, it is a different kind of response, and I didn't talk about that very much,
okay.
So I understand the question. The alternative response, well, let me just start with our Oregon safety model is meant to be a family engagement model. We are meant to engage families in helping to determine appropriate safety decisions for their children. What the alternative response does is take that a step further, be more engaging with the family, have a less adversarial approach. One of the ways that alternative response is different is we don't end with a disposition. So you don't have a founded or an unfounded at the end. You are really just working to figure out what the needs within the family are, trying to get them connected with the appropriate services so that this child will be safe within the family and maybe not come back to the attention of child welfare.
Can I follow up?
So if you would you also then have different workforce application? In other words, you'd have certain social workers who work with neglect and others who work with the more serious responses. Is that?
Thank you for the question, Representative Gallegos. I think that's part of what's still to be determined.
Okay.
As part of the early implementation phase of this work. Some states have created a system where they have different staff doing the different approaches. Some states have done a blend of that approach. When you're in the more rural areas and have less staff, you may not be able to specialize your staff in that way. So that's something that we're going to pull a subcommittee together for to really take a look at what other states have done and what we think will work here in Oregon.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
So some of the other barriers to successful implementation that we learned was inadequate community resources, inadequate child welfare staffing resources, and inconsistent application of assessment and casework protocols and tools. So I think when we go to this next slide, as we look at the governor's recommended budget investments, I think if you look at that last bullet, you see that we're trying to address a couple of those issues. With the Strengthening, Preserving, Reunifying Families programs, also known as Senate Bill 964, we're working on ensuring an adequate service array to be there to support the families that are served through both approaches. We're also looking at adequate child welfare staffing as well.
I'm still trying to get my brain around this. I'm still trying to understand why we're different from other states. So the goal then, if someone is reported a situation of neglect, so rather than perhaps removing that child, if the caseworker doesn't see that the child is in immediate danger, that instead there might be a team of people working with that family to strengthen it so the child can stay there. Is that sort of what I'm envisioning? I'm seeing this?
Yes, yes, Chair Kamei. That's exactly what you're envisioning. And if you have the staff and if you have the community services that can wrap around the family, then you know your goal is to keep the child at home safe. And we've been able to begin that with the strengthening, unifying families funds through 964 and with our staffing, and our goal is to continue to grow that. So rather than have our response to remove children and think that's the best way to keep them safe, we can try and maintain children in their home with those supportive services around them and reduce really the number of children that get removed in the first place.
So from that one slide when you talked about the community, mm-hmm. we're looking at the faith community, we're at the judicial branch, police who might have reported a child was endangered because of neglect or whatever. So it seems like you're trying to get the whole community to come and support this family rather than removing the child and putting her into a foster home. Am I sort of envisioning this correctly?
That's correct, Chair Tumi. And if I could add one piece
yes.
to that for the committee. Neglect is really, it's not an incident-based abuse generally. There are some times when it is, but it's cumulative. Most frequently, it's a cumulative act of abuse. And our ability to engage those families earlier, we hope, will allow us to create safety plans and keep them in the home. These are also families that, because of the conditions they're experiencing, become very disenfranchised from their communities. And so one of the wonderful things about the Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families programs is there's a venue for these families to become reintegrated with the community so that if they again hit sort of a hard spot, rather than going into that cycle that ends up in neglect for the children, they'll already know of resources in their community that they can reaccess to help them. So our hope is that while these efforts won't necessarily decrease the number of calls we get, mm-hmm. we hope it will decrease the number of calls we get on an individual family. So we may get more calls because the community is more activated around the issue of child safety and family health, but we hope that we won't get repeat calls on individual families because they'll be better connected to their communities. When you're dealing with sexual abuse and physical abuse,
yeah,
it's generally an incident
yeah.
that occurs, so it's a different dynamic.
Right, yeah, I sort of got that. We had Donna Beagle coming to our committee a few weeks ago, and I think that gave us sort of a different vision of perhaps what might be determined and neglect by the outside community. And so in order to help someone in that kind of situation, we're looking at putting together a lot of resources to keep that family intact. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you get a call into this program from a family in the system of neglect, or that pattern of neglect is maybe a child with severe autism that is being consistently left alone and locked, isolated in a room, do you follow that child through the child welfare program, or does that child get sent over to DD, SPD?
Chair Tomei, Representative Gelser, it really depends upon the unique sort of picture of that family. There are instances where child welfare will stay involved because of the safety issues with the family and working to get those resolved. And there are frequently issues where the family simply doesn't have a skill set and can't create that skill set to care for a child. And so then they're working cooperatively with the DD system in order to get that child what they need. So it really, it's unique to that individual family where they'll be followed and what type of placement that child would have.
And I think that's a good point that I forgot to hit on, and that's the cases that are being served, no matter which kind of approach, still have to be a screened-in report of abuse or neglect. So we're still serving the same families through this approach that we're serving now. It's just that we'll have a different way of responding to some of those families.
I just a quick follow-up. I'm what spurred that question, there have been a number of cases recently, not in Oregon, but in other places where kids have been severely abused or even killed by their caregivers. And the children have disabilities, and the response from the community seems to be that the parents didn't have the appropriate skill set or appropriate support, so that maybe we should have sympathy for these people who have killed their children. And I'm just wanting to make sure that in our system there's that distinguishing line between abuse and compassion for bringing support, and not excusing neglect or abuse because the recipient of that neglect or abuse happens to be a child that might be a high need child. And that's a pattern we seem to be seeing across the country right now.
Chair Tomei, Representative Gelser, the critical piece of our model in Oregon is that it's a safety-based model, and the very first thing that occurs in whichever track we choose to respond to a family is that we're ensuring the safety of the child. And in doing that, you have to look at, you know, what the circumstances are that resulted in a child being unsafe, and then focus in on resolving those issues in the family. And sometimes it's possible and sometimes it's not, and it really isn't a factor of the conditions of the child. It's a factor of the skills and conditions of the parent. So I appreciate that distinction that you pointed out.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's more of a comment. I apologize. I have to leave for previous, but your service is very important to every elected official. We hate to get calls and reports, and so I have a good working relationship with Pat Claire Carey in Central Oregon, and I looked ahead at your brief, and you didn't mention Family Find, which was a program that Commission on Children and Families was able to get Casey Foundation to fund. I know that Pat is working on, he's trained to do that, and I hope we continue to do that as part of the reunification of families and how important that is. It's going to be tough, it sounds like, because I know from his staffing, to have more people going into the families and doing your service like that. It's going to be tough to fund more people like that. I also find you talk about that it's going to be important to work with the Early Learning Council hubs, which you realize will not be covering the entire state, so that's going to put more burden on DHS about the nonprofits through the hubs or the old commission system. So I wish you luck. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions while we're stopped? All right. Continue. Thank you.
So I'd like to talk about another one of the prongs that Ms. Johnson mentioned in the beginning of the differential response work here in Oregon, and that's the Senate Bill 964, Strengthening, Preserving, and Reunifying Families work. In 2011, that Senate Bill 964 was passed and partially funded by the legislature. And really what that funding and the model does is support innovative services within communities to fill service gaps that may exist. So it brings communities together around the table to really take a look at their own communities and see what their services and needs gaps are in keeping children safely maintained at home or getting children home more quickly. It looks at culturally competent services and looks at trying to prevent families from coming back to the attention of the department, as Ms. Day mentioned. So right now, we are in the process of setting up these services across the state in Oregon. And let me see, we are in 7 counties right now. We have contracts in place or very close to being in place for having these strengthening, preserving, and reunifying family services. In 3 counties, we're in various phases of collaboration with the community, assessing their needs and gaps as a community, and getting their contracts in place. We have a plan for rolling the services out across the state, and so we'll be moving into other counties soon.
So are you getting feedback from the counties where you are rolling this out? So tell us what that feedback is.
Well, part of how the process works, Chair Tomei, thank you for the question, is the very beginning is bringing county partners to the table with child welfare, bringing stakeholders to the table, and really looking at where the gaps are in the services. So, for example, one community decided that they were going to do some focus groups. They brought parents together and said, what are some things that might have been helpful for you to either keep your child home safely or get or have your child returned home more
and
timely?
These are people who had had their children removed. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So that's just one example. I went to another community where they had already done a significant amount of needs and gaps analysis, but they did. But it was a broader look at their community, and when they focused more on their child welfare population, they decided, you know, we haven't talked to our child welfare staff, and they'll have some good ideas about where the gaps are in the families that they're serving. So they brought together child welfare staff. So there's a variety of ways the tribes have been involved in this, some of the communities, and bringing them together, asking them about what services could be in place to help with tribal families as well. So those are some examples. So these are just some examples of the services that have been contracted for that were seen as a gap in the community to achieve the goals that I mentioned earlier. So I'm not going to read them all, but you can see life skills coaches, some intensive in-home services, some of the other services that we've seen that are common gaps in needs in communities are housing, drug and alcohol, treatment. So those are some of the services that the counties are putting in place to try to fill those gaps.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I think one of the things to note from this array of services is that there are some themes, as Stacy was pointing out, such as short and long-term emergency housing for families. That is a component of neglect that we see in cases that families simply don't have somewhere to be in order to care for their children, relief nurseries, and furthering those services because they provide support not just for the children but also for the parents and that together so that they're able to interact and sort of learn, parents better learn how to manage their children. But as we implement further, I think it's going to promote a conversation for us with other state agencies around how we deliver these services. Child welfare is not a housing service, usually, but we are in some instances helping to fund that kind of service for a community because they identify it as critical to the families within that county.
And as you know, Lois, this is now Human Services and Housing Committee, so it's an issue that we're very, very concerned about and involved in. So I'm glad that the agency is also aware of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So now I'm just going to talk about the third prong of the three-pronged approach to effectively implementing differential response in Oregon, and that's working to support our Oregon safety model. As I've mentioned, that's our practice model here in Oregon, and we are working right now to just enhance it. We're working on our continuous quality improvement, on ensuring that our staff are consistently applying in preparation for a differential response implementation. So we're working closely with the National Resource Center for Child Protective Services, who has helped a number of states with their safety model work. They've also been involved in our work around the design of differential response here in Oregon. So right now we're in the phase of piloting some specialized training for our supervisors. We're focusing primarily on supervisors. That really goes out and refreshes people what the Oregon safety model is about, and then follows that up with intensive field consultation. So we're talking with the supervisors after the training about how they're practicing, how it looks like in everyday work, and how they're applying those concepts in their everyday work. We are piloting that in 6 counties right now, and it's going very well. We've gotten a lot of positive comments from the staff. They're really liking the close interaction and able to follow up and really continue to talk about this work with the consultants that are delivering the training. So the plans are underway to expand this statewide and ensuring that people are on the same page and consistent on how the safety model is being practiced throughout the state. So, in conclusion, I just basically want to say that involving our communities and courts and stakeholders in the implementation of the differential response work that we're embarking on is seen as critical in not only the differential response design and implementation, but also in the strengthening, preserving, reunifying families work. So that will continue as we continue to roll out this work statewide.
Any questions or comments? I think this is just terrific. Having worked with Children's Services Division many years ago, I just think this is such a step forward for the state and for families and children. That before, it was like we had one tool, and now it looks like we're looking at a whole array of tools, and they're inviting everybody in the, not everybody, but many, many people in the community to help support that and help provide services. Housing is, I mean, I don't think I heard anybody talking about that in DHS, even though we knew it was necessary. How do you provide that? So it's really exciting. And we'll be coming back in February, and I would hope that you would come back and maybe bring caseworkers, maybe family members, to tell us how this has worked. That would be terrific. Any last questions or comments?
Great.
Chair, thank you. Committee, yes. We really appreciate the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we certainly would appreciate coming back in February to talk about it again.
Good. It seems like we keep asking more and more of DHS and the DHS workers, and we don't provide you the funding that you need. And we appreciate you looking out into the community and getting supports that, unfortunately, we're not able to give you the kind of financial support that you really need. But thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming. So with that, I think I will close the informational hearing, and we have a hearing on Wednesday, right?
Yes,
the Early Learning Council, and is that the only one that we have on Wednesday?
Check.
Okay.
Development Council also.
Good. That's what I was asking. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gilser.
Yeah. Great.
Quicker with her laptop than I am.
Good.
It's the okay. Oldest thing. It's really handy. You can get all the slides right there.
It's great.
So nice.
With that, we'll close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing.